Wholesalers, welcome to another episode of Wholesaler Masterminds Radio. You know, wholesalers, sometimes you got a guest that's just so good, you got to have them back a second time. And then other times you have a guest that's so good, you got to go in for thirds, especially when he's just completed writing his third book. Mike Robbins is the author of, as I said, three books. The first one was Focus on the Good Stuff, and the second one was Be Yourself, Everyone's Already Taken. And now his latest offering, Nothing Changes Till You Do, is dropping quite shortly, if it hasn't dropped by the time you actually listen to this. Mike's a sought-after speaker who delivers keynotes and seminars to groups of all kinds. He has clients including Google, Wells Fargo, eBay, Schwab, Gap, and the San Francisco Giants, being a former ball player that he is. His work has been featured in Forbes and the Wall Street Journal. He's been on ABC News, Oprah Radio, and since 2008, he's been a regular contributor to the Huffington Post. Mike Robbins, welcome to Wholesaler Masterminds Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me back for the third time. It's nice to be here.
It is delightful to have you back for the trifecta, my friend. Let's talk about Nothing Changes Till You Do, A Guide to Self-Compassion and Getting Out of Your Own Way. When you say nothing changes till you do, what do you actually mean?
Well, you know, Rob, I write about this in the book, but I had a session with my coach. This was a little while back, and she said to me, you know, Mike, you keep trying to change all the circumstances and situations around in your life, and you're working really hard to do all this thing, and you got to remember it actually works the other way around. Nothing changes until you do. And when she said that, I was like, you know, it's kind of a simple concept. I said, what do you mean? And she's like, well, when you change, when you shift, everything shifts. And it got me thinking, and I actually started writing a bit about that at the time. I didn't think I was going to write a book with that title, but it turned into a blog post, and then it was like, wow, you know, and I started to look back on my own life, you know, back when I was playing baseball and years in sales and for all these years as I've had my consulting business, and I realized as big things have shifted and changed in the circumstances of my life personally and professionally, they were almost always preceded by some internal change, internal shift. And the tendency for a lot of us as we, quote-unquote, chase success, if you will, in life and try to expand it is that we're often erroneously looking outside of ourselves when really the best place to look is within. So that's really what nothing changes until you do means.
You know, wholesalers, wouldn't you agree sometimes we're looking too much at the firm, we're looking too much at the circumstance, we're looking too much at the financial advisor, we're wanting them to change when maybe some of the changes that need to be made are inside of ourselves.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of interesting about that. Now, you talk about being hard on yourself, being hard on ourselves. I would suggest, and wholesalers, I know you'll back me up on this, as a community, we probably have a doctorate in being hard on ourselves. Why is that? Why do you think, what's your take? Why is it we're so hard on ourselves, Mike?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons, and I think specifically for competitive result-oriented people, as wholesalers are, as people who are in any business where it's really, it's numbers-driven, it's performance-based, we're focused on that. You know, again, you know, right background as an athlete and then in sales and even in the work that I do now, the tendency is we have to do is, you know, again, we look to the outcome, to the result, to then determine our worth, if you will. And somehow or another along the way, many of us have been taught, either directly or indirectly, that the way to get to success or to produce better results is to really, you know, be hard on ourselves, push ourselves, never give up, you know, don't rest on your laurels, all the things we were taught. And well-intentioned, I think, by the people who taught us those things, not wanting us to get arrogant or cocky or sort of get too full of ourselves. But the dark side of that, the downside of that, is then what ends up happening, and I imagine almost every single person listening to us can relate to this, no matter how much success you've experienced in your life, wherever you are in your journey, there's always that tendency to kind of look over your shoulder, if you will, not necessarily behind you, but more so in front of you and go, how come he or she has more or is doing better or something? And in that comparison process, we end up devaluing ourselves. And it becomes this never-ending, insatiable desire to somehow reach perfection, which it just doesn't exist. And so therefore, even when we do create success or have good things happen, the challenge is oftentimes we don't end up appreciating it because we keep thinking, I got to keep driving, I got to keep pushing. And sadly, and we've all experienced this, it's often when something bad happens that we finally stop and wake up and go, wait a minute, you know what? actually things are pretty good, or I was doing pretty well, like I just wasn't paying attention to it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about the catalyst event, maybe a bad catalyst event, something that makes you particularly introspective. Maybe it's loss in your life, whatever the case may be. But for so many of us, tell me your thought, it's short-lived. I mean, you have that moment of introspection, and, you know, maybe while you're grieving, you're thinking, oh, well, thank goodness, you know, my family's okay, or thank goodness I'm still
right
here and there's lessons to learn. And then, you know, 7 days later, you're back on the treadmill running as fast as you can.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I'm a big believer in practices. You're absolutely right. I mean, I've written about this in Nothing Changes Until You Do, but I actually wrote about it in my first two books, and I talk about it all the time. I mean, I've had many wake-up calls experiences in my life that have been, you know, painful experiences that have opened my eyes and opened my mind and heart, and I think, I'm sure everybody listening's had that happen. And, yeah, the window kind of opens for that brief period of time, even if it's just for a moment. We hear a story on the news or we talk to someone and it has a stop and pause and go, whoa, I really want to pay more attention to my kids and to what's important and to be grateful. And then again, we get back on that treadmill. So it's about setting up practices in our lives, things that we can do on a regular basis that resonate with us, you know, that really work for us. It's not so much about, again, even if it's reading it in a book like mine or what someone else says, but it's like, what really works for me? And finding those simple little practices, you know, that can help you. I talked to a guy speaking at an event down in San Diego a little while ago, and he said to me, you know, that one of the things that he's done for many years is had a little notepad on his desk, and he'd say, you know, at the end of the day, Mike, I was talking specifically about appreciation in this particular speech I was giving, and he said, you know, Mike, for many years I've had this little practice that I just, at the end of the day, I jot down a few things that went well that day that I'm grateful for or proud of or just whatever. He goes, even if it's been a rough day. And he's like, you know, it's just something that's worked for me. It's a little simple thing. He's like, I don't do it every single day, but I have it there on my desk. I have a little thing in my briefcase that I carry. And he said, you know, it just helps me sometimes, especially when I find that I get stuck. So, you know, again, I'm a big believer in coming up with simple practices, things that you can actually do that are going to work for you to keep you focused on not just being successful. That's, of course, important. But how do we keep things in perspective? Because, you know, Rob, one of the biggest things I've learned, especially just in the last number of months, specifically actually writing this book, people kept asking me as I was writing it, because it was my first book in 5 years. So I hadn't written a book in a while, and they said, Mike, how's it going writing the book? You know, how you doing? And what I found myself saying, and it was totally true, was, you know what I've realized this time about writing a book? Writing a book's really easy. It's dealing with myself that's the hard part. And, you know, when we can make some peace with ourselves. So the work that we do, and the wholesalers out there, the work you guys do that's hard, that's challenging, and you got to be out there and you're grinding through it, and the ups and the downs and the twists and the turns of it, the hardest part of it, I would imagine, now I don't do that work, so I don't know specifically, but it's how do we deal with ourselves on a daily basis as we engage in our work? And when we're kind and positive and genuinely have some things in perspective with ourselves, I would imagine the life and the work becomes that much easier. When we're not, it's very difficult.
Well, let's peel the onion on that a little bit. I mean, the byline of the book says a guide to self-compassion, mm-hmm. and then you get into the other descriptors, self-compassion, self-acceptance, self-love. It all sounds pretty narcissistic. Tell us more about this.
Well, it's interesting because I think the idea of self-compassion or self-acceptance or even self-love on the surface can seem sort of narcissistic. What does that mean? I'm just supposed to stand back and sort of pat myself on the back and say, hey, you're great. And, you know, again, this idea even of self-compassion, and for a lot of us who are competitive and result-oriented, that can sound kind of soft. Like, what do you mean? I'm supposed to be easy on myself? And it's really actually about how do we treat ourselves, literally. Like, how do we talk about ourselves? When we're by ourselves, in our own mind, you know, I mean, what do the researchers tell us, the social psychologists tell us, I think it's like most human beings have between 50 and 60,000 separate thoughts every day. And on average, for the average human being, 80% of those thoughts are negative and critical. So we're walking around all day, every day, having a conversation in our head about life, about ourselves, about what's going on. And even the most optimistic and positive of us, about 80% of what's going on in our head is negative. So it's really about, again, how do we make peace with ourselves? You know, back, Robin, I was playing baseball, and I played at Stanford, and then I played professionally. When I was on the mound pitching, the hardest opponent that I faced wasn't the guy in the batter's box. It was the voice in my head. And so self-compassion and self-acceptance is really about making peace with ourselves. And it can sound kind of corny at some level on the surface, but as you go deeper into it, it's really about, no, you know what? This relationship I have with myself is the one and only human relationship I'm in all the time, everywhere. And so even when we're dealing with difficult clients or difficult people in our lives or difficult circumstances or situations, it's actually more important at some level to focus on how we're relating to ourselves in relation to the person or the situation, because, again, if we change, we shift, our perspective's going to shift.
But let's talk about moving from the concept you speak of, which I think is irrefutable. I think wholesalers, if we're being honest with ourselves, there's just truth upon truth in what Mike's talking about. But give us some ideas about how you bring a little bit of this self-compassion into the equation. How do you define the what we're supposed to do for ourselves? What are some actionable things that allow us to weave that into the day-to-day?
Right. The first thing is to pay attention. And one of the ways we can start to pay attention is, how are we relating to ourselves? Listen to actually the words that we use to describe ourselves, to talk about ourselves, to talk about our lives. Now, look, this isn't about, you know, me putting words into your mouth, but there are things that we say about ourselves out loud that are actually quite disrespectful. And sometimes we won't even say them out loud, but we'll say them in our head. I mean, I remember years ago, Rob, you know, my wife Michelle and I have been together for 13 years, and we had been dating for a little while, probably about 6 months, and I was really frustrated. I was just starting my business, and I was trying to get some things going, and things weren't going the way that I wanted them to. And I called her up one day, and I was just kind of railing. I'm like, I can't believe this isn't working, and I'm trying, and I don't, you know, and I was frustrated, right? And she listened to me compassionately for a few minutes, and then she finally said to me, "Stop talking about my boyfriend like that." And I said, "What do you mean?" It stopped me in my tracks. And she said, "Listen, I know you're upset and frustrated, and I hear you, but I don't appreciate you talking about yourself like that." And she said, "If someone else were talking about you like that, I would get mad, and I'd be defensive. And just because you're you doesn't give you the right to talk about yourself like that."
Wow.
And so one of the, and it was such a great lesson, and my wife has been and continues to be such a great teacher for me, but one of the things I try to remember about self, not to be self-important or too full of myself, but like, I'm somebody's husband, I'm somebody's father, like, I'm an important person in certain people's lives, that it's important for me to not only take care of myself, like physically and all of that, but actually, how do I talk about myself and treat myself? And if the people who really loved me heard someone else talking about me or treating me that way, I don't think they'd be very happy. So sometimes we can even take it outside of ourselves to come back to, how do I relate to myself in a way that's kind, that's caring, that's compassionate? And some people will say things to me like, "I don't know how to do that," or "I've had so many years of being hard on myself or critical of myself," or "that feels uncomfortable," or "are you telling me to say positive affirmations in the mirror?" And it's like, not necessarily. I mean, do that if it resonates with you, but no, what I'm saying is to start treating yourself in the way you would treat someone you really love and care about. How would you talk to your child if they were in a moment of vulnerability, however old they may be, whether they're little, like I got little girls who are 8 and 5, or they're grown? How would you talk to them? How would you talk to or treat, you know, a pet or just some one person, some animal, someone outside of you that you have a lot of kindness and compassion for? And can you then turn that around on yourself? And even sometimes as you catch yourself being negative and being critical and getting all stressed out and uptight with yourself, can you stop? And at the very least, I mean, I have moments when I do it with myself, and I don't even know what would be more kind and compassionate in the moment, but I'll just stop and say, okay, this doesn't feel good. There's got to be another way that I can think about or relate to myself right now or what I'm doing. And just that stopping and pausing and taking a step back sometimes can shift our perspective.
I can't help but be reminded of it. I think it was a Glendale Federal commercial in Southern California so many years ago, and it was the phrase, "stinking thinking." And you gotta avoid stinking thinking.
Totally.
Right? And I wanna just touch on one other thing about the self-compassion, because you actually opened up a description of self-compassion that I wasn't quite expecting. I guess if I thought more about it and in anticipation of the book, I couldn't really read more about it. But I also thought about how you do what you do to yourself or for yourself. So as an example, you know, when I deal with my coaching clients, sometimes, you know, as a byproduct of working on their business, which is what I do, right? I focus on the business. But as a byproduct, you know, sometimes I see people just smacking themselves around too much. And I'm like, dude, just, you know, take a half day off, go get a massage, go and just, you know, sit on a rock, go have a nice glass of wine, whatever the answer is for you. That's where my head went a little bit for self-compassion. Is that also a piece of it?
That is, absolutely. I mean, I think of that as self-care, you know, being kind to yourself, taking care of yourself in a way. And that's, it's all part of the same sort of sphere, if you will. Self-compassion is more of, you know, in the moment, how we treat ourselves, how we relate to ourselves, how we talk to ourselves and about ourselves, think about ourselves. You know, being able to take the afternoon off and go get a massage, go for a hike, go for a walk, go do something that's nourishing to us, that's an absolutely important aspect of this as well. And a lot of times the tendency, and this is so true, Rob, for, you know, people like me and you, a lot of us listening, again, who are really focused, want to be successful, the tendency is, okay, I'm just going to hunker down, I'm going to work harder, I'm going to grind it out, I'm going to make it happen. And as we all know, that oftentimes is the worst thing that we can do. The best thing that we can do is actually disengage and step away from it. Because, look, one of the things, and you and I were talking about this before we even, you know, got on to record this, is that nowadays, I mean, there's so much going on. There's so many different things that we can do. There's so much communication that we have. Quite frankly, I have moments all the time where it just gets overwhelming to me. And I have to literally, like, physically stand up, move away from my computer, sometimes walk outside, or if I'm traveling on the road, like, get some fresh air, and just, like, my wife and I joke about this, we walk outside, and let's pretend like it's 1985, and we don't have iPhones, and there's no email, and there's no social media, we've just, remember, you just pick up the phone and call someone, or go see someone, or read a book, or whatever, you know, because I think technology and the pace in which we live is so frenetic these days, we have to manage ourselves in relation to that. And that's absolutely a piece of taking care of ourselves and being compassionate and accepting of ourselves, not thinking that we're just going to keep up with all of it and somehow get to the end where we cross everything off our to-do list. It just seems almost impossible these days.
See, wholesalers, this is why Mike does the trifecta at Wholesaler Masterminds Radio, because he's got really good insights, and they're insights, wholesalers, that we don't usually talk about, right? We talk about the business end, and we talk about practice management, and we talk about making you better at the hard skills, but here's some, you know, soft, as Mike said, some softer stuff, still critically important, but stuff we maybe don't talk about enough here at Wholesaler Masterminds Radio. Mike, what a pleasure to have you back. Thanks for coming back.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again, Rob. Always good to talk to you.
Wholesalers, join us again for our next episode of Wholesaler Masterminds Radio.
Being recorded. If you do not wish to be recorded, please disconnect at this time.